KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
NBC News Radio, I'm Melissa Rayberger. They haven't had a raise since 2009, but Social Security recipients are now set to get one in January. Experts say the increase should be about 3.5%. First-class letters will cost a penny more to send next year. The Postal Service, which is running low on cash, says it will raise the price of a stamp to 45 cents. Stocks closed higher today. The Dow is up 180 points. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has delivered a big show of support for Libya's new government, arriving on an unannounced trip to Libya's capital.
The Libyan people demonstrated their bravery and determination, and I am proud to stand here on the soil of a free Libya.
Israel's prime minister is warning hundreds of Palestinian prisoners released today not to return to terrorism or they will be held accountable. The Palestinians were released in exchange for an Israeli soldier who had been held for more than 5 years. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Melissa Rayberger, NBC News Radio.
I'm Michelle, and I'm going to Walgreens because I remember the misery of last year's head cold.
Ugh. Wake up and smell the coffee grater.
Smell. Yeah. I could barely breathe.
Route 17's blocked up.
My nose feels like Route 17. This year, I'll be ready. At Walgreens, I can find answers like new Robitussin nasal relief tablets to relieve my head cold symptoms.
Robitussin. Relief made simple. This week at Walgreens, get select Robitussin cold products for $5.99 with in-store coupon. Walgreens. There's a way to stay well. Use as directed.
Welcome to Walmart. You like this LG TV?
Yeah, but it doesn't fit my budget.
Well, layaway's back. Just pay a little at a time and it's yours.
Layaway's back? Perfect.
Layaway's back?
Layaway's back.
So I take it you're putting that on layaway?
Layaway's back for Christmas in our electronic toy and jewelry departments. Buy now and pay a little at a time on the gifts they want most. Layaway available October 17th through December 16th, 2011. Excluding Black Friday, November 25th, 2011. On eligible items, restrictions and fees apply. See store for details. Save money. Live better. Walmart.
From the KCAA Weather Center, I'm Rod Tanner. For tonight, we'll have clear skies, high low 58. Wednesday should be a sunny, warm day with a high of 84. It'll be clear Wednesday night, high low 56, as winds gust at 20 miles an hour. Thursday continues to be sunny and warm with a high of 84. Thursday night, skies will be clear with a low of 55. Friday will finish the week with a sunny, warmer day, expect a high of 87. Again, for tonight, skies will be clear on low 58. Wednesday should be sunny with a high of 84. That's your weather forecast for this hour from the station that leaves no listener behind, NBC News Radio, AM 1050, KCAA.
Good afternoon. It's 4:03. I'm Brett Malik with this Inland Empire traffic update brought to you by 99 Cents Only Stores. Shop 99 Cents Only Stores first for a great selection of fresh fruits and vegetables for only 99.99 cents each. Save more. Shop 99 Cents Only Stores first for everything. Well, on the 215 southbound through Riverside, that is slow from Columbia Avenue to Blaine Street. The 91 westbound is sluggish from the 60-215 split to Central. The 10 eastbound, slowing down from Archibald to the 15. It is currently 87 degrees here in downtown San Bernardino. We have Taking Your Business Seriously with Gary Capolino coming up next. I'm Brett Malik on the station that leaves no listener behind, and your radio home for Poor Man's Nation tonight at 7 p.m. right here on AM 1050 and KCAAradio.com.
Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company has been serving the greater Inland Empire for over 60 years. For all of your printing needs, from full-color printing to high-speed copying and everything in between, go to Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company. Their staff is committed to your total satisfaction. Great service isn't just lip service at Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company. It's the way they do business year after year. Having trouble finding drafting supplies? Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company still carries a complete selection. Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company is rated high in customer satisfaction by ValueStar, an independent rating company. For all of your personal or business printing, call Redlands Blueprint and Commercial Printing Company at 909-792-3478. That's 792-3478, or visit them on New York Street in Redlands off the I-10 and the Crosstown Freeway.
Make money, save money, invest money. On November 5th, you have the opportunity to attend an educational event in Costa Mesa at the Westin South Coast from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. and learn how to make and save more money. Laura Langmeyer will show you new ways to create more cash and other important tips. Carla Dennis will be explaining why every person should have a business and other helpful tax hints. Special guest Lorraine Conaway will help you discover how to allocate your assets and to build your financial power team. Seating is complimentary for the first 50 registrants. Please log on to www.carladennis.com/NLV5. That's Carla with a K to register for this event. Conaway & Conaway offers access to securities through J.P. Turner & Company, LLC, a member of SIPC, and access to investment advice and financial planning through J.P. Turner & Company Capital Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor. J.P. Turner & Company, LLC, and J.P. Turner & Company Capital Management, LLC, are not affiliated with Conaway & Conaway, Inc., Cohesive Tax Firm, or Laurel Langmeyer Associates.
The other station claims to be local. Since when is Glendale local? KCAA, News Talk 1050, your true local station.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously with Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Here now to help you take your business to the next level, the host of Taking Your Business Seriously, Gary Capolino.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we're going to talk about optimism versus cash flow. If you have a question relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the takingyourbusinessseriously.com webpage. If you call us during the radio show, we will try to answer your question on the air today. Okay, on the subject of optimism versus cash flow, the idea here is that if we are full of capital when we start our business, we have a much higher tendency to just pour the money in, filled with optimism that the business is going to be a success. Generally, we don't start a business and plan to fail. And if we're putting our money into it, in our mind, we are even less, we have lower expectations of failure. But the fact is that the success or failure of a business does not come down to money alone. But all of us who are light in the pocket, shall we say, we know that running out of money, in many cases, prevents us from doing the things we want to do, or in the case of a business, the things that we need to do. Okay, so the concept here is to temper our business spending, to temper the optimism that makes us spend with a little conservatism and a little bit of care. Because the fact is that whenever we are in business, we want to function with a monetary cushion that says that when there is a financial surprise, and there will be financial surprises, but when those financial surprises come, that we are ready to deal with them. And this doesn't mean that we have to have thousands and thousands of dollars in the bank to deal with that surprise. Depending on the size of our business, hopefully the surprises will be small. But whatever those surprises are, being able to deal with them can at times be the difference between success and failure. Now, in my early days of building my own business, I read a book that was very interesting. It was written by a consultant and a business coach. His name was Harold L. Wright, and I'm not sure if he's still active these days, but the concept was that if you wrote him a letter, he would send you a book, and after you read the book, you would then call him, and then he would determine where you were in your business and whether or not he could help you. The name of the book was How to Make 1,000 Mistakes in Business and Still Succeed. And the idea was that each of us make mistakes in our business on a regular basis. be it minute by minute, hour by hour, day by day, on a constant basis. And it is through these mistakes that we learn and we find the functional way to do business. However, the idea also is that mixed in with all these mistakes are what we call the critical errors. And the concept of the critical error is that this kind of mistake is the one that can put you out of business. Now, the perfect example of one of these mistakes is largely bridled with enthusiasm, but the situation where we expect to be doing a bang-up business right from the start, okay? And if we're making pens, as a simple example, and we believe that these pens will be priced at half what everybody else is charging, but we have low overhead, so we can sell them. So we put together a production facility that is just going to generate these pens like crazy. And after a couple weeks, you have an unimaginable supply of pens, and nobody's buying them. So now you've made two critical mistakes. You probably rented a production facility that is far beyond your actual needs. And now you're saddled with rent. Because, Gary, traditionally, how long can you rent anything?
As long as you want.
Right. But what does the landlord usually require as a minimum?
You have to stay there at least a year.
Yeah, usually that's what they're looking for. So if you realize in your first month that the 5,000 square feet of rented space that you rented really only needs to be maybe 1,000 or 2,000. You are now suddenly spending twice to three times as much on rent as you need to spend. And if your revenue doesn't improve real fast, doesn't that sound like a critical error?
Yeah, it's very critical.
Okay, so either you try to make another deal with your landlord, but chances are there's a lot of things called tenant improvements where the landlord or you have spent money to improve this place so you can do in it what you need to do. Okay, but until you find a way to pay for this, this could be the death of your business. Okay, but ultimately, most of these critical errors, other than market miscalculations, come down to that problem of enthusiasm, where you spent much more than you needed based on unrealistic expectations, and you just kissed a lot of money goodbye. Now, if you're full of resources, this may not put you out of business, but it'll make it take a lot longer to recover. Okay, now in this concept of optimism versus cash flow, what is the solution to this particular problem?
Well, you need to have goals, but the thing is to have these goals actually attainable, and you need to be able to reach them in the amount of time that you're hoping for, or close to that amount of time. You can't be wishing for the stars when you can't wish for those stars. You need to be wishing for kind of a, I don't want to say you need to really lower your expectations, but they need to be reasonable and something that is likely that you can actually achieve.
Okay. Now, let's for the moment start off with an unrealistic expectation. Now, this in every case is not unrealistic, but we're just going to set a benchmark. Let's just say that our goal for the year, not profit-based, just sales-based, but we expect to sell $1 million of product in the first year of our business. Okay, now, do we have to wait until the end of the year to see if this is an attainable goal or not?
You don't have to. You can make estimates on how you're doing and how you're improving from your first month or 2 months or 3 months or something like that.
Okay, you said the magic word, month. Because as accountants, which I am an accountant, we traditionally produce financial statements at the end of each month. Okay, now, with the startup issues and the different distractions and not getting things in place on time, I mean, we wanted to start, say, on January 1st, but it turns out January 1st was a holiday. So our sales expectations weren't met. But the fact is that as we opened in our first week, we found out that there were problems with the cash registers. The employees didn't know what to do. We were late getting things to the bank. We couldn't write the checks to pay our bills. And a number of things interfered with the smooth operation of our business in its first month. Okay, but nonetheless, if we were achieving, hoping to achieve $1 million in sales in the first year, then what would we expect the sales in the first month to be, roughly?
About a twelfth of the $1 million, which is...
Okay, somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000. Okay? So, in that first month, if we had, say, $50,000 of sales, would we consider ourselves to be generally on track in terms of attaining that year-end goal?
Yeah, you would hope that they would. Your first month would be less than what you get the second and the third and the through the 12th month, but you would assume that it's going to improve because there are a lot of things that could go wrong the first month, so it's going to be lower. But yeah, you'd say you're on the right track.
And you have other things called the momentum. You're in place. You have repeat customers. Now remember, in your first month, most of your customers would be people that are finding you for the first time. So as those people patronize your business, now we're not talking about a specific product here, but as those people patronize your business, if you satisfy their needs, the expectation would be that these people will come back. And who else will come to your company?
New customers.
Right. Some of these customers will find you by accident. Some people will find you by need. And some of these customers will come because your existing customers have told you about this new business. So there is an expected natural growth that goes from the first month to the second month and continues through the life of the business until, in a sense, you've saturated your market. Now, this concept of saturating your market is a difficult concept. And as we talk about startup businesses, that's not what we're really expecting in the early going. The question is more, have our customers saturated us? Are we able to meet the needs of our customers, or do we need to increase our capacity? So, if we're planning on $1 million in sales over the course of the first year, okay, breaking that down by 12 suggests that we would hire enough employees and rent enough space to generate the product that would result in $70,000 to $90,000 a year. $70,000 to $90,000 a month. Okay, so in that context, if at the end of the first month your sales were only $10,000, what would that mean to you as the owner of this company?
You'd be worried.
That's right. Okay, now, at the same time, what are we full of as we start our business?
Optimism.
That's right. So we may be slow a little bit to acknowledge these things. But at the same time, there is a knock on the door that is saying to us, are your expectations realistic? And each day or each month, we have to look at our plan versus our actual and decide on the adjustments. Now, if we're not seeing enough customers, maybe the result is that we need to put more resources into marketing to try to get more people to come to our company. Okay, this is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. I'm here with Gary, and we're talking about optimism versus cash flow. You can check us out on our website, takingyourbusinessseriously.com. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. Thank you.
At Attention business owners, do you want to spend more time focusing on your business and less on managing it? In these economic times, you don't need to add another full-time salary to get more effective administration. Take your business to the next level with radio host and founder of the part-time CFO, Gary Capolino, who's been serving Southern California business for over 20 years. He provides outsourced professional services you can afford. Call Gary at 951-653-5053. That's 951-653-5053 or GaryThePartTimeCFO.com.
Sassy.
Today's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, no, a rattlesnake! Sassy, help! You will, but first you want to talk about shelter pets? The majority of pets in shelters are there due to owner-related issues like divorce or allergies? Save us, Sassy! What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy.
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything, at a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at BigBrothersBigSisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
This heavyweight bout is about to begin.
What's the champ wearing? Looks like an examination gown. And from the back...
Ooh, that's not pretty.
Champ, what's with the getup?
I've got to take care of my family, so I'm getting those important medical screenings.
The fight is over! Champ, you look pretty healthy out there tonight.
But I'm still getting those tests. For a list of tests you need, go to AHRQ.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to AHRQ.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home.
These days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Making Home Affordable from the U.S. government has already helped many struggling homeowners. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home. I'm home.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Southern California's Inland Talk Express is KCAA, News Talk 1050.
They say I'm crazy, but I have a good time. Life's been good to me so long.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we're talking about optimism versus cash flow. If you have a question relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the takingyourbusinessseriously.com webpage. If you call us during the radio show, we'll try to answer your question on the air today. All right, we were just talking about optimism and cash flow. We're talking about the example of a company that has projected for the year, or started out thinking at the end of the year their sales would be $1 million, and we were confronting the feedback in the loop that says that after 1 month you only have $10,000 of sales, so you're a little bit under budget, to say the least. And we were suggesting that their reaction to this, still being full of optimism, might be that you would make some adjustments to your business, like throwing some money into advertising or the kinds of things that would bring people to your business, to bring the customers to you. All right, but let's, for the moment, step away from the hypothetical and start talking a little bit more about the capital and the limits of capital. Okay, traditionally, where does the money for our business come from?
Well, you have the traditional coming out of your savings that you've saved up over a lifetime or however long. But then you can go to a bank and get a loan. There's, you can take out your home equity. Or like you were suggesting, that you may not have any money to start off with, so you have to go get money.
Okay. Now, just to touch on the subject of loans, let's give ourselves a little bit of a reality check here. But would a bank make a loan for a startup business?
It might if you have a history of starting up businesses and you've done well in the past, it would definitely consider you as a someone who would be able to pay the money back and maybe make more money out of it and be successful.
Right. How about the business plan, so that they can understand specifically what you're trying to do?
Yeah, hopefully you have one, so you actually know what you're trying to do and you're not just looking for the loan.
Well said. Okay, and anyway, that frequently is an important part of the process. But in the absence of a loan from a bank, are there other places that you can loan money from?
Friends and family.
Exactly. Okay, and depending on who you are and what you can do. Now, for some people, unfortunately I'm not one of them, but some people are good at something. And sometimes people approach them with deep pockets and say, I would like to invest in you and effectively start a business around an individual with unique skills. Okay? But the intent largely in this show is not to talk about the people who have it all. Okay? The idea here is to find a way to make something from rather limited resources. So we're going to follow with the path of not having a whole lot of capital to put in your business. So the capital that ultimately is built in your business is largely self-generated. Now, the fact is that when we are getting started, there is some capital that needs to go into the business. Just kind of like a seed for a plant needs water to grow. Okay. Sometimes we throw in some fertilizer or plant food also to help it grow. Okay. So the fact is that a lot of times we start off using our personal credit, whether it's credit cards or, as we were mentioning a moment ago, maybe some home equity. But the point is that we're not talking about the traditional thousands of dollars that it takes to start a business. Okay. Now remember, when we get into a business, what are the basic goals?
To make money.
Okay. Also, maybe a little self-employment. And ultimately, the idea is to add to the savings that you have, not erase it. Okay, so we have to keep that point ever in mind. And that, again, is the price we pay for over-enthusiasm or over-optimism, is we can very quickly empty our bank account, and then that's all we have to show for our business. Now, a number of years ago, somebody approached me about a business that he had, and he was working out of his garage and doing reasonably well. But the problem is that working out of his garage, there were limits to what he could do. And the question was, should I invest in my business and get a space to work in that's more than I can fill right now? But at the same time, maybe it's something that I can grow into. Now, at the time, and this is before the big housing bubble collapsed in the last 5 or so years, but at that particular point in time, I told him, it seems like everybody these days is walking around with $200,000 of equity in their pocket. So I said to him, the idea here is not that you would take $200,000 and invest it in your business and see if it'll work. But why don't we start at a different level? That if you were to rent 1,000 square feet of space so that you could expand your operation, that would probably require about $1,000 a month. And the idea was that why don't you take $20,000 out of your house and put it into your business and see if it works. So it was a limited investment, probably 10% of what he had. And that was what he did. Now, unfortunately, there were some other elements that interfered with his pursuing business at that particular point. But the theory was sound. Okay? Understand what you need to get to the next level. Okay? Now, in your business, aside from the basic goals of making money and building wealth, your means to that end is occupancy, labor, and raw materials. Now, the occupancy ultimately is rent. Okay? The labor would be the employees that you need to hire to produce and deliver the product or service that you're producing. And the raw materials are the other items that you have to pay for that become part of your finished product. Labor is obviously one of them, but they're covered in employees. But whether it's the wood or the metal or whatever elements go into it, that would be the raw materials. Now, the fact is that if you are producing something, okay, the first question you need to ask yourself is, are there people to buy my product already? Now, the first question also, perhaps the question you want to ask before that, have you produced any? Okay, but the next question might be, do you need to produce any? Because if you haven't sold any, what's the point of selling? What's the point of making? But at the same time, in order to sell things, sometimes you need to have a tangible product that you can show your customers. Now, for those of us who are dealing on the internet, the concept is that we take pictures of our product and show them on the internet so people can see them. Now, in order to take a picture of a product, you have to have one. Now, depending on who you're selling it to, the next question is, between the time that you sell it, what is the time period that is required for delivery? And is that time period enough time to make a product for sale, or do you need to have an inventory? Now, when we're talking about the hypothetical situation before, where you produce product for $1 million, so you'd have products to sell, and then suddenly there was nobody to buy them. Obviously, there's a flaw in the program, but at the same time, did you really need to make all those pieces until you had somebody to buy them? Okay? In that particular sense, if you don't need to build a lot of items, then you probably do not need to hire a production staff. But usually when you are selling something at the production level, you are trying to sell them in volume. And the people that you sell them to are usually not the end users. Okay? In the example of pens, obviously pens are produced in quantity. And before you can sell them, whether it's to the wholesaler or the retailer, you have to be able to show them what it's like. So a limited production run makes sense. But when you sell them to the middleman, the wholesaler, okay, he's going to want a significant quantity. And my recommendation is that you get the order and then you produce them. You don't need to have a production staff that's building a product that hasn't been sold. And you don't have to worry about producing those products until you have sensible orders. In my days dealing with inventors, and I was the president of an organization called Inventors Forum, but in my days working with the inventors in that club, I used to always tell them that there are two things that are going to happen. Either you're going to end up with a warehouse full of them, or you're not going to be able to produce them fast enough. And unfortunately, that seems to be how this world works. But the idea is to throttle the growth of your company consistent with the growth of your market. Okay? If you have no market, you have no business. If you have a small market, you have a small business. And your business should grow and shrink consistent with its production. Now, the idea is, or the expectation is, as ideally, in the example that we were using before, if we can project our annual sales so that we have the same sales on a month-to-month basis, that's the perfect world. The fact is that you will have days when you're selling, and you will have days when you're looking for customers. And the idea is that you want to have enough production or enough production capacity, then you can meet your sales when you have the sales. And again, if you are producing, manufacturing a product, okay, you are going to be selling them in volume, and your purchases will be in volume. And usually there will be some lead time that gives you a chance to produce them in the quantity that's necessary. And you will gain experience with this through your early orders. The fact is, whatever you're selling, if your starting quantity is 100, you get geared up for batching batches of 100 or maybe 500 to be able to meet the demand as they go. But over time, your sales will no longer be 100 at a time. They will grow to 1,000 at a time because your product is starting to penetrate the market and it is starting to develop some demand. But there's no need to increase your quantity until there is demand to support that increased volume. Now, there's a favorite story that I have years back about a guy who was selling a pot. It was both a pot and a bowl that could be used for microwaving a product. And he explained when he had his first sale, the guy asked for 15,000 of them. And he, in telling the story, expressed, "I didn't have any, but I told him, let me get on the phone so I can check on my inventory." And he just kind of pretended to be talking, and he turned to the guy and says, "I can have them for you in 30 days. Well, the fact is that he was not going to produce them himself. But he had already lined up a manufacturer who could produce them for him. And he knew that to get 15,000 of them, that he would both need money from the customer and that he would need 2 weeks with the producer. So what he did is he got from the buyer a 50% deposit, which he needed to pay for the product, and then the rest was due on delivery. Now, this is an ideal story, although it happens to be true, but the fact is that the growth of your company must be throttled by the actual demand. Otherwise, you're going to get ahead of yourself. And the other thing that very quickly happens in a lot of cases is sometimes our demand and our company grows faster than we can support it. Remember, your employees are paid when they work. Your product sells and you get paid, not always on delivery, but at some time thereafter, and thus financing is required. If you don't have the capital, financing becomes a very important part of the game, and you need to be very careful about how quickly you grow your company. And this is where an accountant can be very handy to help you run your projections and determine what your cash needs are and to find ways to finance the growth of your company as it builds. Okay? Very slow growth can kill a company about as fast as very quick growth can kill a company. This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. I'm with Gary, and we've been talking about optimism versus cash flow. When we return, we'll continue to explore the cash flow optimization. If you have any questions relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com webpage. Stay with us.
At
Attention business owners, do you want to spend more time focusing on your business and less on managing it? In these economic times, you don't need to add another full-time salary to get more effective administration. Take your business to the next level with radio host and founder of the part-time CFO, Gary Capolino, who has been serving Southern California business for over 20 years. He provides outsourced professional services you can afford. Call Gary at 951-653-5053. That's 951-653-5053 or GaryThePartTimeCFO.com.
I'm in the car next to you on the highway, heading to work. I sit in front of you on the bus. I work in the office down the hall and stand next to you in the elevator. We've known each other for years, and I've told you a lot about my life. But of all the things you know about me, here's one you don't. I'm one out of every six Americans, and I'm struggling with hunger. This isn't an incurable disease. It's not an uncontrollable epidemic. There's enough food in this country to feed every hungry person. This problem is closer than you think. Fortunately, so is the solution. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for those around you, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I knew I was stuck at this kid's house for the night. I decided to just go to sleep and get the night over with. But those guys came into the bedroom and got into a massive pillow fight. But let me tell you, it's not easy falling asleep when a sweaty little kid falls on you every 5 seconds. Even after the lights went out, Raleigh and his friends stayed up. A bunch of them snuck up on me to try and pull my hand in a bowl of warm water trick. Well, that was enough for me. I went downstairs to sleep in the basement even though it was pitch black. I left my sleeping bag upstairs and that was a mistake, because it was freezing. I think it was probably the longest night of my life. When the sun came up this morning, I found out the reason it was so cold. I was sleeping right by the sliding glass door, and some fool had gone and left it open overnight. That really stunk, because if I knew there was a way to escape last night, I definitely would have taken it. To read more about the sleepover, check out Diary of a Wimpy Kid, The Last Straw by Jeff Kinney. Explore new worlds and check out more cool books at your local library. And visit read.gov, brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
My name is Ruth Roosie, and this is how I live United. I read to children as part of United Way's education program. It helps them create links between language and literacy and prepares them for a better academic future. I figure I have the time and they have the need. My name is Ruth Roosie. I help kids prepare to succeed in school. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
For the record, hell, we are the record. KCAA, the Inland Talk Express.
They say I'm crazy, but I have a good time. Life's been good to me so long.
This is Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, the part-time CFO. Today I'm with Gary, and we've been talking about optimism versus cash flow. And now we're going to get into cash flow optimization, the part-time CFO way. If you have any questions relating to the subject of small business, you can call us at 888-909-1050, or you can email us through the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com webpage. If you send us an email, we'll do our best to answer it on a future show. If you call us, we'll do our best to put you on the air and answer your question. Okay, before the break, we were talking about the early business optimism and the things that we do. But shining in our face whenever one of the big retailers opens up around us, we can see them doing all the things I've largely told you not to do, such as they hire employees so that when everybody comes to the store, they can see that there's an employee on every aisle ready to help you, and all the things that go with customer service. Okay. Also, when they have their grand opening, it's frequently very well publicized, and the fact is they spend a lot of money on the promotion of the new opening. They spend a lot of money on all the extra employees for the opening. And when they open, they are filled with employees. Now, granted, we would all love it if that could happen to our business, too. Although, truthfully, it might kill some of us. But the fact is that this particular marketing approach is based on two things. One is the fact that they have a formula that already works. Now, the formula for a store opening is much different than the ongoing formula. Okay? And the fact is that as you see a store open with employees on every aisle and all that, and I was one of those employees back when I was about 17, and there was something that happened 2 weeks after the store opened. Gary, guess what that would be?
You got fired.
That's right. They fired all the employees. So in the end, their ongoing staff was actually 30% of the original staff. Now, the answer to the original question, what did they do? They did fire a lot of employees. They didn't fire me. It took them another 3 weeks to get to that. But the fact is, they broke us down in waves. After the first 2 weeks, they literally fired 60% of the staff. And then from the remaining 40%, they fired another 10 or 20% at that particular point. And ultimately, it was a process of perfecting and hiring the best employees. And that's not a bad practice either. But the question is, do you have money to invest employees you aren't going to keep? And that's an important consideration. Okay, now, when we talk about cash optimization, the part-time CFO way, okay, I have an experience that I had with a client several years ago. They were a construction company, and their revenue varied over the course of the year, but their annual revenue was in the range of somewhere between $1 million and $2 million of sales a year. Okay, now, the company was being taken, it wasn't being taken over, but there were three partners, and one of the three partners was managing the company, another one was watching it make money, and another one was working in the company. But the fact is that something happened with the partner who was running the company, and the management of the company was suddenly thrust on the partner who was actually doing a lot of the work and managing the staff or the workers. Anyway, so as he took over the company, he recognized that he didn't really have the gifts of accounting and administration. So he hired the part-time CFO to take care of such things for him. Now, the beauty of this arrangement was that he didn't have to rent office space like his partner did in a different city. Okay, in fact, that was one of the things that came with bringing on the part-time CFO. Instead of hiring any offices, he had the part-time CFO. And the part-time CFO took care of the accounting and the administration. And this took care of certified payrolls. It took care of payroll itself. It took care of accounts payable. It took care of generating invoices and accounts receivable. It took care of the banking. It took care of the entire administration for him. Therefore, while I functioned, in a sense, as his bookkeeper and as his accountant, I also functioned as his office manager. In fact, his office was my office. Now, for those of you out there who have not shopped around to understand what the cost of an office is, generally office space these days runs at about $1,000 a month. And that would be for about 1,000 square feet. It's about $1 a square foot. Now, sometimes you can find smaller offices, but generally, 1,000 is about as low as most landlords prefer to go. Just because what can you do in such a small space or a smaller space than that? And even as I was running different business models for this show today, I recognized that if you took the 1,000 square feet and tried to have a restaurant, you got about enough room for a kitchen and a cash register, but no room for tables. And a lot of takeout places work that way. But if you're going to have a reasonable restaurant, you'd probably need at least 2,000 square feet. So 1,000 square feet for an office is probably sensible. But at the same time, if you have a business, you now need full-time employees. And if you are going to have your own office, at a minimum, you are most likely going to hire somebody to function as a bookkeeper. Now, a functional bookkeeper these days generally will cost a business between $2,500 and $3,000 a month. Okay? That plus $1,000 a month for an office. Now, in addition to those things, you need the you may find yourself needing additional employees because somebody has to be in the office when the banking is taking place, and there are a number of things that could be additional demands of the company. But for the moment, let's overlook those things, except maybe the facilities expenses. One thing to have office space, but you got to furnish it. And if the place that you're renting has no offices partitioned, then you need tenant improvements. Okay, and those very easily can add up to $5,000 to $10,000 as well. Okay, some of this becomes part of the rent, some of it needs to be financed, but regardless, setting those one-time expenses aside, okay, your ongoing expenses of having an office come down to about $1,000 for rent and then about $2,500 to $3,000 for a functional employee to manage your office for you. And that's before you get into enough business that requires additional employees. Okay, that employee for a business between $1 million and $2 million a year, okay, paid between $1,500 and $2,000 a month for this complete service. It eliminated the need for an office. It eliminated the need to hire employees, administrative employees, that is. He still needed construction workers. But all those elements and the pitfalls that go with it were eliminated, and they were all covered by the part-time CFO. So for those of you who have a small business and are wrestling with the issue of whether you should rent space and hire office employees, okay, the part-time CFO is a very unique model that can have significant meaning for you. And I encourage you to investigate it further. The part-time CFO can be contacted at area code 951-653-5053. You can also contact them through their website, GaryThePartTimeCFO.com. In either case, that's one avenue. Now, to go a little bit deeper in terms of what we discussed earlier, in terms of spending money only when it's absolutely necessary, let me retrace my steps in the early days of my business. Now, granted, my business is delivering professional services. So in that particular sense, I didn't have to deal with labor. And if I worked out of my house, which I did not have to pay for occupancy, otherwise known as rent. Okay? The only thing that I did have to deal with was the element of supporting myself. So it became a question of me finding clients. And I thought this would be a relatively easy process. It wasn't. Okay? But over time, I learned to do that. But there were many solutions in the meantime. One was to take a job as a temporary accountant working for the temporary accounting firms. That generated income. And for those of you in the early days of your business, the old adage, don't quit your day job. But at the same time, you still need to put the time into your business if your business is going to be successful. Okay, generally between 20 and 40 hours a week will do. So if you're working 40 hours a week, that makes for a very full schedule. And ultimately, there's a lot of sacrifices that are made. Okay, but The long and short of it is that as you begin to get clients and develop your business, then the secondary employment need goes away. Now, for me, I didn't have the expense of the office, and at the same time, I was able, as I started developing clients, I was able to take on employees without all the normal trappings, or shall we say, pitfalls of employees. Eventually, my wife was able to leave her job, and she was able to join me. My daughter did the same thing, not quitting her job, but she became of employment age, and she started to help me. And that made it much easier to expand my business in my own home. But the problem that eventually came up was that to hire anybody else, I could not do that in my home. My privacy was too important. But at that particular point, I then had the clientele that provided enough income that justified the expense of renting office space. Now, the rental of office space was nonetheless a significant hurdle, but it was no longer the same leap of faith that it would have been when I had no clients. Okay, but nonetheless, it required a reorganization of my thought process. And eventually, as my business continued to grow, the issue of rent stopped being a day-to-day concern. And the next issue was hiring another accountant to do some of the work that I was doing. Now, that particular process was largely outlined in last week's show. And if you're interested in what we covered in last week's show, you can listen to the podcast, which can be found at the TakingYourBusinessSeriously.com website. In fact, all of my earlier shows can be heard at that website. But the point is that in bringing on an additional employee, the employee was not brought on to handle the new business that came, although that would have been part of their job. That new employee was brought on to help me handle the work that I already had, because I had finally reached a point where I could not do all the work that I had. And that put me in a position, in a situation where the new employee was not a overhead burden except for the training period. And that's an important consideration too. But as soon as that employee was able to understand and perform the services that we needed to perform, that person was then what we call a productive unit. They were immediately contributing to the production of revenue of the consulting firm. And as a result, there was no, you know, that risk of mine in hiring another employee to do the work that needed to be done was not a function of optimism. It was a function of the demand that was already created and the work that was waiting to be done. The only issue was how quickly that employee could be trained and taught to do the work that the clients demanded. And the fact is, this is a beautiful model. And while it doesn't fit everybody's situation perfectly, the concepts are very clear. Okay, the money is spent when the demands of the business require that money be spent. And when I needed a vehicle to see my clients because the functional vehicles were no longer able to do the job, they were bought. But they were not bought with cash, although I would have loved to save the expense of financing. But they were bought on credit, so that the payments were monthly over 5 years. And therefore, the expense of that additional asset was spread out over its useful life. A capital leasing accomplishes the same thing. This has been Taking Your Business Seriously on KCAA 1050. I'm your host, Gary Capolino, and we've been talking about optimism versus cash flow, and optimizing cash flow. You can check us out on our website at takingyourbusinessseriously.com or email us through that website. Our thanks to KCAA 1050 and Brett the engineer, and thank you for all for listening. Thank you.
KCAA's Inland Talk Express. KCAA, Loma Linda, 1050 AM, the station that leaves no listener behind.
NBC News Radio. This is Superstation KCAA in Loma Linda with your local news. Now here's what's going on at 5 o'clock. An investigation has been launched into a pair of railroad mishaps early today in Colton. Union Pacific officials are trying to determine just what caused six freight cars to derail near Rancho Avenue and the I-10. UP's Aaron Hunt said another slow-moving train on an adjoining track later became involved. Generally high marks have been given to Riverside County's emergency response system. County supervisors have been told that the AMR ambulance service is meeting its contractual responses 92% of the time. Supervisor Jeff Stone suggested that it might be financially workable to put one paramedic on county fire trucks in the 22 cities where CAL FIRE responds.
I don't see it as a way for them to balance their budgets. I'm just saying if they're electively making the effort to put paramedics on the engine, then if there's a way to at least help them break even on that, then why not?
700,000 acres of the San Gabriel Mountains and the Puente Hills are being considered for a national park. The plan's been released now for public review. Flu immunization clinics are shifting into high gear. The San Bernardino County Health Department is offering flu shots tomorrow at the Wrightwood Community Center and the Phelan Senior Center, and Thursday at the Ukaipa Senior Center. Well, if you like our fall weather, there's more to come.
We are looking at fairly normal weather.
That's climatologist Miguel Miller's forecast through the end of the year. Notes that the storm earlier this month was just a false start to the rainy season.
For the foreseeable future, we don't see any storms on the horizon, so it was just one of those early season storms followed by weeks of dry weather.
The following is a paid political announcement. I have David McKenna in studio. David's running against a 24-year incumbent.
Glad to be here.
David,